All right, welcome back to the Sports Line. Rich Roth, Ed Lane, Anthony Santaniello here as well. NBA expert only when Ed wants him to be.
Selective interpretation.
Coming up in just a second, we'll replay an interview that I recorded earlier with Jason Lockenfora talking some Redskins, maybe a little Jets as well. But first, we got to let you know about the Master of Arts in Teaching program at Randolph College. And if you've got a degree, that's not really worth much. Like, for example,
communications.
Communications. Sure. Sure. Communications degree. Or any degree, really. And you're interested in teaching. They've got a great one-year program at Randolph College. Fully accredited. Very affordable. And the really impressive thing, Ed, is how quickly they can get you a job.
Right? 1 year, Rich. It's a 1 year program and 99% job placement. Once that 1 year of Randolph College's Masters of Arts in Teaching program is complete.
Program runs May to May or August to August. So if you're looking to jump in, you can jump in August. And within a year, you'll have your Master of Arts in Teaching degree and be ready to get in the classroom. Again, 99% job placement right after that 1 year program. And many folks have offers and opportunities coming their way before they even complete the program. For more information, best way to do it, best place to go, randolphcollege.edu/teach. Again, randolphcollege.edu/teach. It's 5:37 now. It is a Barlow Steakhouse and Bistro Thursday, and as I mentioned, had an opportunity to catch up with CBS Sports' Jason Lockenfora, an NFL insider, and talked about a few different things, but a lot about the Redskins. Here's what
he
had to say.
We're joined by Jason Lockenfora of CBS Sports, one of their insiders, covers the NFL and so much more. Hi, Jason. Welcome back to the show. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. How's everything with you guys?
Everything's good, man. Everything's good. A little bit of a slow time of year, as you well know, but everyone looking ahead to football season and being down here in Virginia, obviously lots of eyes on the Redskins and, you know, what a mess / disaster that franchise still seems to be after all these years, huh?
Well, I don't know. I guess you kind of have to grade on the curve, you know? Are they, you know, the model NFL franchise, the quintessential NFL franchise, have they regained the prestige they had in the 80s and through the mid-90s and the first Joe Gibbs go-around? No. No. But, you know, they're not the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're not the Cleveland Browns. You know, there's other teams that have had longer runs of futility. Look, they didn't handle the Scott McLuhan thing the right way. That was butchered from a PR standpoint. But they've had a pretty good offseason, and the titles don't really matter. I like what they've done from a personnel standpoint. I think they'll be competitive in their division. And now we'll see how much money Bruce Allen and Dan Snyder are willing to stuff in Kirk Cousins' pockets between now and July 17th and whether that's enough to make him sign on the dotted line beyond just this one-year franchise tag. And I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of the day this makes sense for both parties. And if they're able to bring in a Terrell Pryor and rebuild the defensive line and have what looks to be on paper at least like a prudent draft, you know, Jonathan Allen and Ryan Anderson, I mean, they fit. They fit immediately, and it's good value. And then if you were to add a Cousins on top of it, I actually think they've had a pretty good offseason.
All right, we'll get to Cousins in just a second, and maybe I need to, you know, temper my comments earlier, or at least clarify, because, you know, the Redskins were a once great franchise, and it seems like under Dan Snyder, you know, things have gone awry, and, you know, even getting back to McLuhan earlier and, you know, that whole mess and the Kirk Cousins thing, you know, where now he's been, you know, franchise tagged a couple years in a row. And I don't know. I mean, so many Redskins fans around here just really wonder if they're ever going to be really good again under Dan Snyder, and it almost seems like, you know, they do just enough to be competitive,
yeah.
but something, you know, there's always the, you know, the you know, Lucy pulling the football away at the last second,
yeah.
you know, that type of mentality. Not that they're a joke like, you know, the Jags or the Browns or somebody like that, but just, you know, they're never going to get back to where they once were as long as Dan Snyder's still calling the shots, because every time, you know, it looks like he's giving up control, he seems to jump right back in and take control again.
Well, it's certainly hard for him to completely sit on the sidelines.
Yeah.
And they didn't love the fact that Scott was getting all the credit. And, you know, the fans love Scott. He was a cult hero, and it looked like he had rebuilt the foundation and a base and had done things in a sort of conservative and smart manner and didn't care about star power and didn't care about sex appeal. And that's not always the way Dan Snyder wants to do things. The one thing I would say, though, is, even with Scott there, Bruce Allen controlled the checkbook.
Mm.
And he who controls the purse strings controls the franchise. If Scott has to go through Bruce to negotiate with Cousins a year ago when he really wanted to do something long-term, but Dan and Bruce didn't, I got news for you. Scott wasn't getting his quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's still a level of dysfunction there. There's always going to be. I think we've come to grade them on a curve a bit because their lows have been so low. From some of those Mike Shanahan press conferences to the debacle with RG3, you know, we could just go on and on.
Right.
But I do think that they've sort of reached a baseline now. The next step will be sustained success, and that has eluded Dan Snyder, and them going to the playoffs, you know, having back-to-back 12-win seasons and, you know, winning the division more than once every decade. I mean, there's a ways to go, and I don't know that they'll ever get there with him at the helm, but they have seemed to have risen from the abyss, you know, of the end of that Dan Snyder regime into even the first year of Jay Gruden's time here. And you know, does RG3 have a concussion or doesn't he? You know, in dueling statements. And, you know, the team surgeon having to put out a statement and the second doctor having to put out a statement. I was there for some of that. It wasn't that long ago. Heck, some of it happened down there in Richmond. So at least they're not there.
What ultimately was the real story with Scott and the departure? Because again, I mean, conflicting things and leaks and what ultimately, for Redskins fans out there who don't know, what ultimately transpired there?
I mean, look, Scott has his demons. That's well established. He has a struggle and a battle. That's a daily situation for him. That was the case when they brought him in there. That was the case when they ultimately let him go. There's some things that went on that aren't the norm, but I would say the culture there, the drinking culture there, is not endemic to Scott. It existed before he got there, and I suspect it exists now. And part of it is just interpersonal dynamics. Part of it is just the fact that Bruce and Dan were not going to let Scott handle this quarterback situation, and that was always going to be over his pay grade. And you're a GM entitled to some degree, but not necessarily the way most people might think of it. I think there's some personality conflicts in there. And then there's the whole thing with Cooley. I mean, that basically was, won't call it the beginning of the end because things were already trending in a bad way, but that was sort of the ending of the end. So it's a combination of all those things. You know, Scott did some things, I'm sure, that you know, in hindsight, he would regret. But it's also not as if the Redskins didn't know the road that they were going down and didn't know the risk, you know, that they were taking to some degree, bringing him in. It was never going to be a long-term marriage. I really worried if that was, this is documented, this isn't Monday morning quarterbacking, I wondered if that was the right culture for him from sort of a holistic spiritual recovery standpoint and how long it was really going to work with those certain personalities and some of what's sort of expected there and the late nights and the 3 a.m. phone calls and the, hey, come to my office, we need to talk about this now, or hey, jump in your car and get to my house now, and when you get here, you might be here all night. I mean, they never really wanted to have a GM title. You know, that they've resisted that. And the one time they sort of did it was with Scott, and they were at a low point, and they needed to buy some credibility and get some more buy-in from the fans, and they got that. And then once they had sort of exhausted that, and they looked at the roster and said, well, we think we're in an okay place, and you know, we're not going to let him do what he wants to do in free agency anyway. So yeah, Dan kind of took his building back. But again, doesn't necessarily mean at this time it's got to be awful, because I do feel like the cupboard is certainly far from bare there, and if they just do things, you know, if they continue to operate with the kind of deals they did this offseason, and if they get the quarterback done, I mean, the Giants are a good team. The Cowboys are a good team. I don't know that either's going to run away with that division. I think the Redskins have a fighting chance.
And you like the chances of them. I'm just reading your, you know, looking at your recent column at CBSSports.com. 80% that they're going to get this deal done with Kirk Cousins. No real reason not to. Is that kind of the logic?
I'm just banking on common sense prevailing. And look, that's not always the case in this league. In fact, it often runs counter to that. But, you know, you've got to look at what the situation is here. He's not going to fall off a cliff. They're not going to do better than him. They're going to win too many games to get the kid from Wyoming or UCLA. There's going to be quarterbacks who probably go boom, boom, boom. They're not going to mortgage. They can't do another RG3 trade. You know, I mean, where is the next guy coming from? And you're now willing to give Cousins $44 million for 2 years. How are you willing to make that commitment and not own him for more than 2 years? You know what I mean? And then your Cousins, like, could he play it out and gamble on himself again? Sure, but this is a fourth-round pick. He's already won the battle, if not the war. If you really think in your heart of hearts that, boy, it should be my full injury guarantee should be 80, and they're at 72, you know what I mean, or 67, or whatever it turns out to be, they're going to be north of $60 million guaranteed. And the injury guarantee may be higher than that on a six-year deal, whatever they're going to call it. He's really going to walk away from that and not sign that document and go and play another 16 games and see what happens? I think they squeeze and they squeeze and they squeeze and they squeeze up until the 16th, and then he and his agent, Mike McCartney, who are very smart, reasoned people, are going to sit there and say, brother, you know, look at this. We made 20 last year, and we've got 70 here now, and that's 90 for 7, if you want to add it. Let's say it's a six-year deal, and you're adding in last year. I mean, that's securing, you know, an amazing degree of generational wealth. Not that $20 million for 1 year is bad,
right?
But, I mean, the difference between $65 or $70 million and $24 million, I mean, that's more money than this guy ever thought anybody in his family would make in generations. And he's going to walk away from it on pride because, I really, really think it's got to be 78. You know,
right.
I think at the end of the day, cooler heads prevail here. If the Redskins weren't inclined to come close to market, then it would be a different story. And last year, I would have been the first one to tell you it was. They're never even going to negotiate. They just want him to play it out and see where he is. Well, he did, and he won, and they're in the corner. And they're going to put real money in front of him, and I think it's going to be enough real money for him to take the bird in the hand.
Jason Lockenfora joining us here on the Sports Line, talking a little NFL. And Jason, I know you only have another minute or two left, so I'll try and make it quick. But I've got to ask. I'm a New York guy, Jets lifelong, and you mentioned the quarterbacks in this upcoming draft, and had a great piece the other day on the Jets as well. It's kind of amusing to see what's going on, but as far as you're concerned, you know, they're finally doing the smart thing, huh?
Well, it's Woody Johnson finally, you know, agreeing to a teardown. I mean, and look, he's always the redheaded stepchild to the Giants, right? It's kind of their stadium. He's along for the ride. It's their market, and he's along for the ride. And, you know, yeah, they're the New York Jets, but, you know, they practice in Jersey, and they play in Jersey, and they're blueprinting foothold in Manhattan. So, you know, you look at the Yankees and how they resisted teardowns, right? And you don't want to be seen as conceding anything or not putting the best product out there, but he'd reached the point of no return. They should have done this 2 years ago, but Woody wanted Darrelle Revis for PR reasons and for fan reasons and for PSL reasons, and he was sick of being ridiculed for not spending any money and losing Revis in the first place, and when he did spend money doing it foolishly on Mark Sanchez and all that. So 2 years ago when he brought in McCagnan and Bowles, it was the perfect time to tear it down, but he gave him a mandate to go beat Bill Belichick for Revis, and when you do that, and you're paying $35 million guaranteed to a 30-year-old corner, then you're not gutting the rest of your roster, which explains the David Harris, you know, extension and everything else that went on there. But now Woody's reached a point where he realizes that overspending to try to win 7 or 8 games again and keep this thing together and hope, it's senseless. And, you know, the personalities aren't working anymore. Brandon Marshall had sort of outgrown that locker room, and basically, you know, that that's been sort of the way it's going for him in his career. And it was just time for a change. You know, bringing Fitzpatrick back for one more year was a disaster. So they're going to be bad, but I think they're going to be bad with a bright, you know, potentially bright future ahead of them. They're going to be bad in a pretty good year for quarterbacks. You know, they're going to be bad in a pretty good draft. And, you know, there's really nowhere to go but up. And so they finally did the sensible thing. They finally convinced Woody to do the sensible thing. Should have done it all in one fell swoop back in February and let go of you know, Revis and Mangold and Decker and all those guys at the combine. But, you know, they're where they are now. I think it's where they need to be. They're not going to win a lot of football games. But I do think there's potential there for them to get, you know, to get better.
You know, it seems like, and I'll make this the last question for you, but it seems like Todd Bowles is going to be the guy who ultimately pays the price where, you know, realistically, he's the one guy who probably shouldn't because, you know, he's being handed this roster. And you mentioned McCagnon, and he drafted Hackenberg. And if that turns out to be a disaster, you know, why does he get another chance but not Bowles? I mean, doesn't seem right.
No. I mean, that's often how these things go. And, you know, Woody, if you cornered him and you gave him truth serum, would I think admit that he handcuffed both those guys by sort of that giving them that mandate to try to contend in 2015 when it didn't make much sense. And winning 10 games that year is actually, in hindsight, the worst thing they could have done. You could make the case that they should make front office changes as well. But whatever we could sit here and argue that, the reality is, based on everything I'm hearing, I don't expect that to happen. I expect McCagnon to get to hire his own head coach. Remember, he and Bowles were kind of brought in at the same time in tandem. Charlie Cashley was one of the consultants on that deal. You know, that was sort of the tandem he was pushing. That carried the day. But I do think these guys will get a chance to truly tear this thing down and rebuild it. And I don't think that's going to include the coach. And look, I'm not saying that the McCagnon is going to get a 6-year extension or anything like that.
Right.
But I do think those guys will get to hire another head coach and get at least one more draft.
Interesting. Jason, thank you. I know you got to run. We appreciate the time as always, and look forward to catching up again. Thanks.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Jason Lockenfora joining us here on the Sports Line. We're going to take a quick break. Back with much more right after this. Stay tuned.